Welcome to the April 28th, 2021 A to Z call and Platinum member call. Great to have you with us tonight. Let's go ahead and kick it over to you guys. If you have not joined us in the past, this is really your show. We're here to talk about whatever issues you might be having or challenges you may be facing or just something that you want to discuss. Please don't be shy. We don't go in order. Jump in, unmute yourself, raise your hand. I've just figured out how to raise your hand on Zoom despite having done it for the last, 4 years. So raise your hand or type something in the chat and we will go ahead and tackle anything that you want to talk about. And while we have that little pause and you're thinking about it, right before I got on today, there is a new study that just came out that shows that CRISPR, so is everybody familiar with the CRISPR machine? So the CRISPR machine we're using to replace genes, and we can do that both for research, but I think the most impressive recent use was the replacement of a young woman's sickle cell gene, and she is now disease-free. And so this is really a pretty remarkable piece of equipment. It was the Nobel Prize in medicine this year, I believe. Anyway, fast forward, that's a little background. They have just discovered how to use CRISPR to test epigenetics. So that was DNA. Now they can use CRISPR to turn genes off and then back on again. And so this is going to enable us to look at epigenetics. And if you haven't taken the classes on epigenetics, this is the influence of the environment on the DNA. So how do genes get turned off and turned on and turned off and turned on either over a lifetime or in utero? So phenomenal continuation of CRISPR research. Trisha Reddick's looking at all our geneticists are taking a look at it. And as we get more information on that paper and the quality of that paper, I'll put something out for you. So Karen, I see your hands up. So why don't we start with you? You can unmute.
Okay, there we go. Hi, I had a question. It's going to be a while until I breed my girl again. It's she's the one I had posted about. We went into this having everything done. Everything was normal. We tried a natural breeding. It didn't work. We did a side-by-side. Everything was timed out well. Two reproductive vets and a fertility place all agreed that we did it on the right time. So I'm not going to be able to breed her again until next March. And because I just can't do a winter litter here. But I was kind of, this is what I was left with from one of the reproductive vets who, I admire tremendously. And she said that what she would do is after a list of, things to check for, she would do an SI, then the next day do a TCI, all with fresh semen. And I'm kind of, I've not bred before. This is me first starting out, and that was my first experience. So
I'm sorry.
Not too good. And to jump all the way from natural breeding, and it's going to be the same stud. I don't think there was anything wrong with the stud. The semen was checked. He's had litters before. So I'm going from, natural or side by side all the way to the other end of the spectrum of SI. And I don't know how really to feel about that or how to even look at it in a different way, because she was like, you don't know what happened. She could have cysts, she could have a cyst at the cervix, she could have endometriosis. And this will also be the last time I try breeding her. She's getting older. So I don't have-
No pressure.
I don't have, so I'm looking at it like, I don't have time left to try this, try that and see if it works. But at the other end, I'm looking at this going, wow, I'm going all the way to, putting my girl under anesthesia. And I don't know enough about, I was told it's a very simple, easy procedure, which of course they would say that. I don't know. There's a big wide range in between. Is this common? Do people do SIs as much anymore? I know it's more cervical insemination.
PCIs. Yeah, I think it's a really good question. So let's sort of go over the various issues. So timing was checked, semen was checked. Those are the two driving forces for misses, that it wasn't timed well or the semen was poor quality. That's why most misses occur. But we can also have issues with our bitch's fertility. And we know about cystic endometrial hyperplasia, or CEH, which is a changing of the lining of the uterus, very common as bitches age. One of the main reasons that older bitches tend to be less fertile is because of these progressive changes in the lining of the uterus. And those changes make the uterus, or parts of the uterus, less hospitable to implantation or to the development of the embryo. So the embryo may be able to implant, but it just can't thrive because the lining of the uterus, if you think about the complexity of a uterus and the growth of the placenta and all of the cross placental transfers, it's really pretty remarkable it works as much as it does. Mm. Part of CEH is often uterine cysts. And so at the extreme, we begin to see cysts in the uterus, and those are completely inhospitable to embryonic implantation. So at a cyst, there's simply no way an embryo will survive. So, you know, if an embryo happens to march down, because they all sort of march in and we don't really understand how that happens, but they move from the fallopian tubes into the uterus, they line up and they decide to implant at this location. Some of them pick well, some of them don't pick well. If there's nowhere in the uterus where it's particularly hospitable, now we have sort of extensive infertility in the bitch. We have a very difficult time seeing that if we don't do a uterine biopsy. Now, you can do a uterine biopsy. It is surgery. They have to be put under. It is an abdominal incision, and they take a very small piece of the uterus. Rarely causes complications to the uterus, but it's anesthesia, it's an abdominal surgery, which is always going to carry risk with our bitches. So that's a way to try and look at it. If you're familiar with it, Emmanuel Fontaine, who is the reproductive vet that works with Royal Canin, he's done some publications on endometriosis in bitches, which was really, before he began to push it, just simply something we never thought about or had a way to look at. And we still don't have a very good way. But in his paper, Karen, and I don't think I've put that out, if you ping me on the Facebook group, I will find it, because I was just reading it the other day and I'll post it there. You can do uterine flushes. So they can go up and flush the cells of the uterus to look for endometriosis. Alas, if we have it, we don't have a really good way to treat it right now. We don't really know what we can do to treat it in dogs. We barely know what to do in human beings, frankly, with endometriosis. So what most people decide to do, one of two things: try another natural, knowing it may not work, you know, sort of accepting it may not work, but I'm going to give it a last shot, or going with one of these artificial inseminations. So TCIs today are in most places the most common artificial insemination that we're doing, and probably the best. They have higher numbers than vaginal. That's when we just put the tube up, the regular soft tube that we can do. Those are vaginal artificial inseminations, or surgical artificial inseminations, where it is, the bitch is knocked out. It is an abdominal surgery. It is not a particularly big one. It's maybe 2 inches long, depending upon the vet. The uterus is sort of hooked out gently. It's not like the whole stomach is exposed and the whole uterus is exposed. So they can just go in and pull out the uterus and then they inject the semen in. So they're not cutting the uterus open. They use a syringe and they inject the semen typically into each horn. So what TCI, the numbers are slightly better than even surgicals, which is really interesting. But the reason we tend to do surgicals is because the vet can examine the uterus. And you cannot do that with a TCI. So a TCI, they're going to put a scope up through the uterus to the cervix. They'll try and break through the cervix, which if you have not actually watched the TCI videotape, do so, because that cervix is like a maze like you've never seen it before. I mean, it's just a phenomenal thing. How the sperm get through there, I don't know. But there's no visualization of the uterus to see, are there cysts? Is there something that doesn't look right in the uterus? The only way we can do that right now really well is using a surgical. So in a surgical, what they'll do is as they fish out or bring out the uterus, the vet just goes down it. And it's not very big. You know, it's not even as big as my little finger, except in the giant breeds. But they squeeze it and they feel it and they examine it. And they're looking to see, are there cysts? Is there something that looks like scar tissue? Is there something that really looks awry? If there is, then there's sort of a decision point. We either don't put the semen in, or as long as it's sitting there, we inject it away from the cysts. You know, we try and put it in someplace where the cysts aren't, but the vet can come out and say to you, Karen, you know, there were a lot of cysts, wasn't looking good in there, but I put it in because it's fresh semen and, you know, it's already there, but, you know, chances are she's not going to get pregnant. Or they can say, you know, you have a shot and, you know, we'll have to wait and see, or they can say it looks perfectly normal. The looking perfectly normal is all well and good for ovarian cysts, but it's not helpful with endometriosis because we can't see that visually from the outside of the uterus. So that's probably why your vet is recommending it. Now, it's illegal to do surgicals in Europe on bitches. It is an illegal surgery to do. It is still very commonly done in the United States, and that isn't because it is particularly dangerous to bitches. It is because they have a philosophy in Europe that there's just no reason to knock a bitch out to get her pregnant. You know, that these two things are philosophically incompatible. I just did a surgical. I've done my last four breedings, two of them have been surgicals because I've been using really old frozen semen, and my vet is most comfortable getting a bitch pregnant with a surgical. And I'm not, you know, what am I supposed to say? But it's a surgery. It's an anesthesia. She has to recover from the surgery. It's 7 to 10 days of limited activities. There is always the risk of an infection. So I don't want to downplay the risks. You have to go into a surgical saying, this is worth the risk to my bitch. The risk from my experience, the risk of a surgical is far less than the risk of a C-section. I've only really heard of one bitch getting very ill from a surgical, but they do get infections. They do have reactions to sutures and things like that. So I can't answer that for you. I just want to give you the information.
Can you see the cysts on the ultrasound?
So sometimes, but the time you can see the cysts is when they're in estrus.
Oh.
Exactly. So you can't look today.
Yeah.
You can't look in a few months. You can only look during estrus. So you sort of have this rapid decision process where you're getting her in for a really good ultrasound, and then they can ultrasound the ovaries. Mm. See if there are any ovarian cysts, because ovarian cysts are a fertility nightmare. And they can try and examine the uterus. They can't see it as well as if they physically have it in their hands, but they can get a good visualization of it. So that's certainly a good first step. So before I commit to this breeding, I have to wait till she's in season, but and she has to be pretty far in season so that the uterus, I know, I wish we had better solutions, but the uterus is under the influence of the reproductive hormones, and that's what makes the cysts expand. Okay. Yeah. So I think, you know, it's a really a good conversation to have on the list. The Europeans will chime in and say, absolutely not. You shouldn't do this, because that's the philosophy of their kennel clubs and their countries. Many, many, many Americans and Canadians do it. I don't have that much information about Australia, New Zealand, et cetera. But I don't want to downplay the risks, but I don't want to tell you that it's a terrible thing to do and you shouldn't do it. Obviously, I'm doing them regularly as I use this old semen.
I was thinking of doing it because I thought, was under the impression that it was the better way to do it because you're injecting right into the uterine horns. But you're saying the TCI actually has a better rate of taking.
Yeah, so research is showing that it's not a lot. You know, it's not a massive amount better, but I think everybody was surprised because we all thought that surgical inseminations were going to be have a higher success rate.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
TCIs are like 3% higher success rate.
Oh, wow.
I don't know why. I can't tell you if it's, you know, perhaps an inflammatory response in the uterus. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the TCI really does get the semen the vast majority of the time through the cervix into the uterus. So there's not that much of a gain in the surgical.
Right.
Now, some bitches, they can't get the scope through the cervix. Some bitches can't tolerate TCIs at all, but they are rarer because the vets are getting much more experienced at TCIs and the gear is getting a lot better. The equipment, when we first started, it was a rigid rod. And it was the same size for every breed, you know, so it's a Labrador size rod and you're trying to put it in your mini poodle or something.
Yeah.
Not going to go well. Now it's a scope. We can see what we're doing. Okay. So.
All right.
So that's kind of it. You know, you could do two TCIs, but you'd have no vision, which is probably. So if you don't want to do a surgical, you want to do two TCIs. Although, you know, naturals are actually better. These, you know, the TCI is better than the other two artificial ways of breeding, but naturals are by far still the best. It's just you tried it and it didn't work. So hard to know.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, not really a definitive answer, but.
No, helpful though. Thank you.
So Aaron says, is incontinence common in the last week of pregnancy? It is. I mean, I'm not going to say it's super common. It doesn't happen to every bitch, but it certainly happens a fair amount because of wherever the puppies happen to be pressing on the bladder. So take her out a lot. You can put pads on her. As long as you're not seeing unusual swelling, it's most likely just where the puppies are positioned. And it's not, you know, the really big litters, it's common. But even, you know, say a 6 puppy litter in a medium or large breed dog, if the puppies just happen to be positioned in the wrong place, we can get incontinence. So typically not something to worry about. Just make sure she doesn't have a UTI, because you definitely don't want to go into raising a litter with a UTI. Mo says, discuss bitch long time in between cycles, 11 months and long cycles, ovulation, if day 14, day 19, and now day 29. Any concerns? First litter, natural birth, large puppy cause C-section in the second. So 11 months between cycles is not at all out of the realm of normal. Not at all, especially for large breed and giant breed bitches. So we see, you know, that 6 month, 5 to 6 month cycle more in the smaller breeds. It can be normal in medium and large breeds too, but a year between cycles isn't at all abnormal in dogs. So still well within normal, just perhaps annoying, but they're bitches, you know, it's just, it's what they do. The day 14, day 19, day 29, the progression in the same bitch, I would be concerned about.
Okay.
Because 30 days before until ovulation is considered prolonged proestrus, and it is typically caused by ovarian cysts.
Really?
Yeah. Yep. And so what you, and so this progression from a relatively normal ovulation date at day 14 to a little longer to long, still can be normal, but long, could be indicative of a growing ovarian cyst or an increasing number of ovarian cysts.
So two litters were natural. And then this one, because we did the C-section, I'm keeping her here. And the boys we needed to use because she's part of the ABC co-op came from Maryland in a box. And so she had her first TCI last weekend. So how would, do we have to worry at all about this potentially affecting the birth?
Probably not, but it may affect conception. So ovarian cysts tend to diminish fertility. The good thing about ovarian cysts, if they're only in one ovary, you can take that ovary out and the bitch will be almost normally fertile. But if it's there, it can impact her ability to conceive. You could shoot a ultrasound right now and see if you can find a good vet that feels comfortable looking for ovarian cysts. Because again, it has to be while they're in season. And so she's got to be close to the end of estrus, the beginning of diestrus, still under the influence of progesterone. And so you probably could visualize them if need be. So that's a thought.
She was undetectable forever. I keep pretty close records on this. And then all of a sudden went up to 3.5. 2 days later was at 3.6, which surprised us. And 2 days after that was at 16.
Great. Okay. So you know the day before 16 was probably ovulation.
Ovulation. And so yeah. We inseminated her on, we got the progesterone the day that we did TCI, which was at 16.
Yeah. I mean, we usually like to do them a little higher, but that's fine.
We were just afraid because that was a Saturday.
Always, of course it is.
And so Sunday.
It has to be Easter Sunday, Christmas Day, New Year's Day. That's when.
So the vet said Monday it'll be too late, so don't bother sending another sample. So we're kind of crossing our fingers.
I don't think it would have been too late, but I don't think you were absurdly early either. Okay. So I think, you know, if he's normally fertile, you've got a good shot. So if she doesn't get pregnant, you definitely want to take a look at those ovaries.
Okay, will do. Say, Kimberly was in front of me with her hand up, by the way.
I'm going to her right now. It's harder, you know, if you're not on the screen, I can't see you have your hand up. Hi, Kimberly.
Hi, Gail.
How are you?
I was typing ferociously while I was listening. So we're back with my maiden 3.5-year-old border collie bitch. She missed last time with frozen semen and a TCI, although her numbers looked good. Her vaginal cytology on Saturday showed a lot of superficial cells, and on Monday they were over 80% cornified, did her first progesterone test with in-house IDEX testing for $85, whoop, whoop, and it came back at 0.2. nanograms per milliliter.
Okay.
I've got a retest set up for tomorrow, Thursday.
So Monday she was 0.2. I'm looking
no,
at my
Tuesday.
Count. Tuesday she was 0.2.
0.2. So retest in 2 days. That's yep. Thursday.
Yep.
I need to get 8 hours away to Michigan, which is where the stud is.
You'll have time. But
and well, here's the kicker.
Oh, of course, you have a wedding to go to, or
no, ma'am. She is 6 points shy of bronze grand champion, and she has entered in a show where there are two majors on Saturday and Sunday. Do I go to the show on Saturday and Sunday and then drive to Michigan?
Yeah, you should be fine. So if she was 0.2 on the 27th,
yep,
and she was 80% cornified on Monday. So she was likely just entering estrus.
Probably.
On Monday or Tuesday. So remember, when we do vaginal cytology, it's enter estrus 2 days to the LH peak. After the LH peak, it's 2 days to ovulation. After ovulation, it's 2 days to ripe eggs. So from Tuesday, you probably have at least 6 days before there's a reason to breed.
Okay.
So that would put it, if you do your shows and maybe you drive Monday, I mean, obviously you'll get some more numbers in between then.
Yeah.
But it actually moves much slower than we feel like it's going to move.
I know, that's the problem. I'm so anxious.
I know. We're like,
I want to get to Michigan.
Finally, no, we're in the starting blocks. Yeah, there's no reason to do it. If you try a natural breeding, you're just going to annoy the heck out of her. And the boy will be all hot and bothered for nothing, unless he's a really experienced stud dog.
Unfortunately, the breeder, the owner of the dog co-owns him with the breeder. The breeder is a very savvy breeder in Border Collies, and she's got wonderful dogs, which is why I'm breeding to him. The issue is she doesn't want to do a natural breeding with him. He was successful at a side-by-side AI, has a litter on the ground at 3 weeks of age, I think. So that's, he's proven, but I would rather do natural, but there's no way to convince her otherwise. So it looks like it's going to be a side-by-side AI. And to find a vet in Michigan who's able, willing, etc., is not easy.
But where are you in Michigan? Because there's two really good repro vets.
Near Howell, Michigan. And
where's William Schultz?
He was the first one I contacted, and they have no availability.
And Pat Swallows isn't on. You should ping Pat Swallows on the group, because she found another repro vet. So she used Will for years, and then she found another repro vet very close to her. I know that vet is leaving, but I don't know if she's gone yet. And she's had really good success with this woman. Yeah. So Pat Swallows, ping her on the Facebook group and see if by chance she can connect you. But a side-by-side will work as well. I would do more than one if you can.
Yeah, I plan on doing at least two. If I'm making all of that commitment to drive to Michigan, I better get more time out there than I've driven
to Michigan. I know exactly.
Yeah. It's 8 hours. So, the good news is he's not in Miami. He's actually in Michigan until the 7th of May. So that's another part of my, there's that face.
Oh, yeah, I know. Like, you're kidding. So maybe breed the 4th and the 6th if you're lucky. Now, I was talking to Deb Celine about this the other day, because she has actually very similar timing, where the boy leaves the 8th or something for California from Michigan, I think. So one of the things I said to her is try and get a natural, or you could do a side-by-side, then collect and chill him twice in one day. So the first breeding will be 100%, you know, whatever his semen is. The second collection will probably be 60%, but you can leave them both chilling while you time your bitch if you can't collect him on the way, or they won't collect him on the way, or something like that. So that's an option. If you can get that first breeding well timed, then if ideally wait 48 hours, collect twice in one day, you know, as many hours apart as you can, and use those two is an option. Not ideal, but hey, your option is to chase him to Miami. Just saying.
I know. And that was, at first I was like, oh man, you know, a trip to Miami, it wasn't going to happen in November with COVID, but now May in Miami, that might be a nice thing. But 24 hours versus 8 hours of driving,
it's a long drive. So those are options. But, you know, let us know on the group how the progesterone's moving.
I will. Thank you so much.
Because I still think you have some time, and good luck with this weekend.
Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Okay. Kelly is, are there two Kelly? I don't see it. Short in between cycles, back-to-back breeding is okay on the cycles too close, right? Exact thing has happened to be a first litter large, second smaller, needed a C-section. So this isn't uncommon. Oh, Pat Swallows is jumping on, Kim. She's just logged in, so you can chat with her. So short cycling is 4.5 months or less, typically does not allow adequate healing of the uterus. Whether or not the bitch was bred, the uterus still needs to heal from that progesterone surge during a cycle. And so typically bitches will be infertile 4.5 months or less. So if they come in at 3.5 months or 4 months, they're going to be infertile. And that's from onset of season to onset of season. You can do back-to-back breedings if your bitch is fully recovered from the last litter. The only thing that may not be fully recovered is her coat, depending upon her breed. That may take a little bit longer, but her weight and her condition and her attitude should all have returned to normal if you're going to do a back-to-back. And then you need at least 4 months, 4.5 months or more. If you're going to do a back-to-back, you should wait 5. The declining size of the litter is pretty typical as bitches age. Not always. You can have some bitches that do great their entire breeding career, but we know that as bitches hit 5 and approach 6, they become less fertile. So the closer we get to that. And then back to what I was talking about with Karen, that cystic endometrial hyperplasia, that CEH, the changing of the lining of the uterus, is a progressive disease in most bitches that get it. And it's really common. I mean, I would say by 10, over 50% of bitches have these changes of the uterine lining. And so I had a line that would be very fertile at 3 and early in 4. And by 4.5, we were seeing declining fertility because of CEH and cystic uteruses. So it may be that's what's happening here as well. Davina, I'm feeding my bitch the recommended vitamins and supplements. She was eating well until a few days ago, day 22. Ding, 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 ding. That usually is good news, Davina, just saying. What's most important to make sure is in her diet while she's being picky, mixing tripe with a small amount of kibble now. During these sort of typical morning sickness days, so we label it morning sickness when it's this inappetence or anorexia that occurs right around implantation. So we'll often see it day 21, day 20, day 22, maybe. Really during that time, I have found the most important thing to do is stop feeding them their regular food and do it quickly. Because dogs imprint on foods that make them feel sick, just like we do. So if you ever had a drinking binge in high school and you don't like the taste of rum, I might resemble that remark a little bit. That was 50 years ago. And I still don't like the taste of that because my brain correlated it with not feeling well. And dogs do the exact same thing. So if we want to continue to feed them the regular food, we want to get them, as soon as they feel sick, we want to stop feeding them that food so that it doesn't imprint. And then feed them whatever during that period. Get a roasted chicken, give them tripe, feed them scrambled eggs, whatever they want to eat during that period is fine. And then ideally we get them back on their normal food or a good food. The bigger challenge obviously is the bitches that never go back to eating again. And those really are very, very challenging. And I don't think it's anything we do around implantation or before it. I think it's simply the experience. My niece was that way in her first pregnancy. She ate nothing for 9 months. I mean, it was just unbelievable how sick she was. It happens to some of our bitches too. And keeping them well-nourished is far more challenging than those couple of days around implantation. Teresa. Hi, Galen Group. I plan to breed my 4.5-year-old maiden bitch this heat cycle, but my 7-year-old dog got bred unexpectedly by your male. Oh, great. So now I'm faced with 2 litters. Any suggestions on making this a success? Yeah, Teresa, do you want to unmute? Hey, how are you? Oh, there you are. You're right in the middle.
I am.
Congratulations.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
I know. You know, I say to people, you know, if you breed long enough, you're going to have oops breedings. Like that, where there is a will, there is a way with dogs, and it can happen so fast, which is really frustrating when you have a terrible time getting a bitch bred, and then, you know, she ties her brother in 2 seconds. So 2 litters. I'll give you my experience and then see if anybody else wants to step in. How far apart will the puppies be born if this goes as planned?
So I believe from mom's ovulating time and her daughter, there's 3 days between them with the ovulating.
That's actually not bad timing, Teresa, if you have someone to manage the other litter while you whelp the second litter. Because that's sort of the most important thing. Because you'll be able to put those puppies together later, earlier than if there was a bigger time difference. And that usually goes pretty smoothly with only a 3-day difference. So what's the key? Initially, I don't care if these are the best friends ever on the face of the earth, giving them physically separated areas to whelp and have their litter for the first week to 2 weeks. Because even best friends can lose their minds when they are near another bitch's litter. And a lot of it is the sounds that puppies make that drive bitches to do really awful things. And so if they are within the sound of each other, they will usually be at least very stressed because they will hear the other litter and their brain is telling them to go get those puppies and take care of those puppies. And obviously that is not going to go well with the other mother. So there's this sound issue, but there's also physical separation because even lovely bitches have been known to kill other litters, fight with the other mother, try and steal puppies, just because their hormones are driving them. It has nothing to do with the temperament of the bitch. So 2 rooms, 2 setups, at least initially. The nice thing about this is you can borrow a whelping box. You're not going to need it for very long unless you're planning on doing this regularly. And what you're just going to need, you're going to whelp that first litter. You're going to get them started. At 3 days, you should have a good idea of how they're doing. So you want a somewhat trained, responsible person to stay with them, that first litter, while you whelp the second litter. And once, you know, first stage labor starts, you move in with the second litter, you leave the first litter, they're in another room, it's all good, you go through the second litter. Now you'll have, at 6 days, you'll have a 3-day old litter and a 6-day old litter. So you're going to need 2 people, at least, to help manage those 2 and, you know, to feed or whatever needs to be done.
So that, you're coming to visit me, right?
Deal.
Okay, thanks.
Do you have snow?
Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's the biggest challenge with multiple litters is the manpower it takes. Otherwise, you are going to be so exhausted that you just are not going to be able to make good decisions. You can have a camera on one while you deal with the other, but you know, it's kind of hard to dash off in the middle of a whelping to go help a puppy in another litter. So think through who you have available to help you. How do you need to educate them? You know, you may have somebody who's really experienced, but if you don't, how do you educate them so that you can handle the critical things and you can get some rest because you're going to need it.
Well, but then, the bonus is that we've got the female, the 7-year-old, this is her third litter.
Yeah.
Right. That's great. So she's a little more experienced where her daughter is the first time. So,
yeah. And those experienced bitches, you know, we can give them a lot more space on their own than we would. We can't be dumb about it and abandon them, but we do know they have an idea of what's going on. So you'll probably be putting most of your time into her daughter. And then, you know, at 2 weeks, you begin to get an idea of how the bitches are handling each other and each other's litters. And then as they begin to approach 3.5-4 weeks, and they're getting into that wobbly social biting, you know, playing age, you can begin to put them together. And often at that point, the bitches share duties. You know, they're happy to nurse each other's puppies. They're happy to clean up, things like that. So,
okay.
You just have to get through those first 2.5 to 3 weeks.
Okay, super. Well, thanks for your input again.
Good luck.
Okay, thanks.
Lynn says, if my girl had a false pregnancy, can I breed her on the next heat? Absolutely, yeah. Just remember, every bitch has a false pregnancy. It's just some we can see and some we can't, but they all go through the exact same thing. So false pregnancies are normal. They are not really detrimental to the bitch, although we're all a little crazy, including the bitches. But yeah, perfectly fine. Go ahead.
She got really fat, but she didn't even go through labor. Like, she's done it once before, but I wonder, I only got her with the male once and it was really cold. And I just wonder, like, he was outside a lot, if maybe he just didn't have, if he got too cold and didn't, his sperm wasn't good or something.
Yeah, cold and heat will do it. Certainly possible.
Because usually I try and breed at least 2 or 3 times.
Me too. But I feel much better. If you have a miss after you've bred 2 or 3 times, you're like, okay, it wasn't meant to be. But when it happens after only one, you're like, maybe my timing wasn't good.
Well, it's like we had a blizzard and then she got in with him and it was like, okay, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. So, you know, the other thing we have to remember with false pregnancies is in a situation like yours, maybe it wasn't a false pregnancy. Maybe she just resorbed the litter. And unless we happen to do an ultrasound at the right time, we don't know that. So she really, we're sort of guessing if they actually got bred and they have a false pregnancy, that it's false. But given, you know, resorptions aren't uncommon, it's hard to know unless you do your own ultrasounds a lot, which I don't recommend.
Yeah. I'm just wondering if she'll come in again when my other girl should be coming in May or June.
When did she start her last season?
End of January, beginning of February.
So you want her to come in June or later, or it's going to be a short cycle. Hard to know. You know, they can pull each other in.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully she'll hold off.
But I think, I don't know exactly what happened because everybody came in heat in December and then she started bleeding again in end of January. And that's when she bred with the male, or no, beginning of February, I guess, is when she bred.
So she had a split heat.
I'm guessing.
So
now I'm all confused because I have people asking about puppies and I'm like, I don't know right now.
Ask the bitch. I don't know. Yeah, you just don't know. You don't. Now, what you could do, so that was February, March, April. No, you can't. Never mind. I was going to say you could. Anytime you're not sure they have a split heat, if they are having a split heat, run a progesterone because a progesterone should be 15 or higher if they had a split heat.
Okay.
If it's 0.2, they didn't ovulate.
Okay.
So you can't do it now. It's too late. But the next time that happens, just run a progesterone and it will be, it should be definitive. 15 or higher, had a split heat, has ovulated. Lower than 15, she probably did not ovulate.
Okay. Because normally they all just every 6 months or so, six to eight months is usually when they come in.
Yeah. So how old is she?
She's eight.
So she also might be, like we were talking about earlier, developing either ovarian or uterine cysts that are influencing her cycle. Not at all unusual at eight. So.
Well, I was hoping for one litter from her so I could keep one puppy.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it would be great. But anytime you're older than six, you've got fingers and toes crossed, you know.
Yeah.
Can it happen? Yes. Is it as sure a thing as a two-year-old? No. So.
My young dogs are running laps around me.
My puppy just started barking. So I should go grab my puppy so you can see him. Anyway, good luck, Lynn. Let us know.
Okay.
Barbara says, one of my male pups, now 8 months old, went to a home with an eight-year-old male dog, is starting to mark indoors. Suggestions. So Barbara, you should look in the puppy college, in the adolescents, hang on, let me go pull the page. We have our anti-marking correction. So Starlet, I just put the canine craving, oops, I spelled it wrong. It's with a K link for our food. It is not part of Avidog. Okay, so let me see if I can find the class that includes anti-marking. I think it's living with intact dogs and bitches. The number one thing to do is to put a belly band on him immediately so that he doesn't get to practice this. And the vast majority of young dog or dogs do not want to pee in their pants, in their in the belly band. And so they are much less likely to mark. And then need to set him up. And let me just make sure I'm sending you.
Belly band is, I never heard of it.
Oh, belly band's like a diaper, but it's just, you know, the nice thing about the boys is it's just a band. It's a Velcro, just Velcros onto them. They're usually, you know, soft cotton or something like that. They're used both for incontinent males, but they're also used for intact males who are marking inside. And so okay, so I think I have the right class. I'm gonna give you the link to it. It is the Living with Intact Dogs and Bitches in the Breeder College.
Okay.
Great. I'm sticking in right now. So I'll give you just a brief summary. What you do is they are going to go and take a paper towel and mop up some pee. The best pee is a bitch, but they might be able to do the male because if he's marking because the older male is there, that may work. So you've got this paper towel with some pee on it. You let it dry. So you're not dealing with pee everywhere, but you have a dry paper towel. You're gonna, I always take some saran wrap or plastic wrap to put on the back of it. And then I pin that to wherever they're marking, or I stick it, tape it. So it could be the corner of the couch. It could be the corner of a room. So I'm either gonna use sticky tape or I'm gonna pin it on. I am going to do that when I can see him, you know, so I don't have to be standing right there in the room. I'm usually, you know, I might be reading a magazine, like I don't have a care in the world, or I can see him, but I'm in another room or in the hallway. And I wait for him to mark. So belly band is off. I've given him this delectable smell that just requires marking. And when he marks, I act like I have lost my mind. I am not touching the dog. I'm not up. I'm not mad at the dog, but I am throwing things and I'm running around the house like a absolute crazy person. We want him to think that when he marks, like the entire family becomes unglued, not mad at him, not going after him, but just nutcases. It is a wonderful mechanism to begin to teach boys to not mark. But the more they mark, the more they will mark. It is a habit that very rapidly gets strong because it's so natural. And so they need to nip it in the bud. Now they need to get that belly band on as fast as they can. Teresa says she's got an example if you want to see it. Yeah, Teresa, could you actually show it now? Or there you are. Okay, so Barbara, can you see? Let me spotlight.
So this is flannel.
Uh-huh.
So I've got the fuzzy Velcro on this end and the doodad Velcro on that end. And then you just do it up and do it that way.
Oh, and just make sure they cover the penis.
Yeah.
If they miss the penis, it's not very helpful.
And I've got a couple bits of loopy ones so that you can do it at different, and always keep the loopy away from the skin so it's on the outside, not against the skin, or it'll chafe it and make it sore.
Okay. It's quite large.
And you,
that's for a big dog. They don't have to be. I mean,
size of your dog. Yeah. Yeah. But just flannel works really good.
Oh, so did you make that yourself?
Yeah, I'm a sewer, so
it's
easy. Just a long tangle. Really easy.
Okay, thank you for sharing that.
Make two or three, because if it gets peed on, if you run out the door and you forget to take it off, it's going to get peed on.
That's like thank your you. Panties.
Yeah.
And Barbara, in the course, there is some links to belly bands on Amazon. If you go into that intact course, you'll get that.
Thank you. While I have your attention, can I ask one other question?
Sure.
Okay. So when we last summer had our singleton, when do you start counting the new heat cycle from? So she had the puppy on August the 17th. Her heat cycle started on June 2nd. So
June 2nd. You start from June 2nd. Okay. Yep. And, you know, they vary. They vary whether or not they have puppies. So, you know, it may not be 6 months or 6.5 months, whatever she's been in the past. But the start of the heat cycle triggers the start of the next heat cycle.
All right. Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Good luck with the boy.
Thank you. I'm glad he's not mine.
No kidding. Absolutely. Let's see. Starlet is asking about the raw diet that I feed. It is canine craving. I also feed Stellan Chewies. I feed Answers. You know, I rotate, but canine craving, I buy by the truck full. It is not part of Avidog. It's just the food that I have available to me here and that I like. It's a good food. Heather says, what's the optimal time to ultrasound? 30 days, 28 to 32 days post ovulation. You don't want to go much past 36 days, or now you aren't going to get any count because the, you know, if you've seen these x-rays or pictures of uteruses and puppies, they begin to fold on top of each other as the puppies grow and the uterus tries to find space. So 28 to 32. You can do it earlier, but you're probably repeated if you do and it's negative. Jean says, after a failed TCI in November, looking to do everything right. Yeah, sorry about the fail. She's due to come in mid-June. It's time for me to get a new heartworm test and would like the name of the injectable drug. Don't be, for heartworm prevention. So go ahead and get the heartworm test and let me pull up a link to the product. It is ivermectin or Ivamec. is what most of us use. So this, although it is an injectable product, we don't inject it into dogs. It's injectable for cattle. And there should be a link in, here we go. Oh, you don't want 500 cc's, that's a crazy amount. So the little 30 cc, let me see if it's on Revival. Yeah, so this is it from Revival. Good place to get it. It is $28 and it'll last 100 dogs 3 years. It is the least expensive heartworm medication. Now, remember, it's probably not ideal if your dog has the MDR1 mutation. And that is typically going to be herding dogs or dogs descended from herding dogs. So if you have a herding breed or you have dogs descended from herding breeds, you want golden retrievers. So golden retrievers pretty much don't have the MDR1 gene, so you're safe. And the retriever. So a drop. So what's the key about this? You need a syringe to get it out of the bottle. You don't need it to inject the dog, but you got to get the drop out of the bottle. And you're going to give one single drop to a golden retriever. If you have smaller dogs, you need to dilute it. You can dilute it with vegetable oil, which is typically going to be your best bet. You can use propylene glycol, but I'm not a big fan of giving propylene glycol to my dogs, but that's a possibility. Yeah, insulin syringes. I just got a bunch of syringes with needles off of Amazon. So depending upon your state, it's possible. Okay, so should I run and get my puppy? It's probably going to start him screaming. Hang on, 2 minutes, stay tuned. I'm empty-handed. My husband took him for a walk. I'll have him on tonight on the call. So sorry about that. He's very sweet. So Yesenia Bravo helped me find him. He is from Carolina, Mary's cook, and darling little boy. Raising him for 6 to 7 months for a friend. And then we will pass him off. So he's a delightful little boy. It's the first boy we've had in a really long time. And my husband's in love. So it's great. Might have a boy again. Anyway, okay, guys, I have to run. It was wonderful to see everybody. Really, really good questions today. This will be up in a couple of days. And oh, just really exciting news for me. Those of you who have interacted with Nicole Barnett, who is our course producer, she's staying on with Good Dog. And so her last day was going to be Friday, but now she's going to be with us longer, which is extremely exciting for me. So terrific, guys. Thanks.
Thank you.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. Thank you.